Welcome to ATS Mix.
And I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
But also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The Internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
Well, I am Johnny Anonymous.
And I'm his partner, Dave Rabbit.
And, you know, I got to ask, how was your Easter, Dave?
Well, John, it sucked. I mean, you remember last week I told you I was going to rent that rabbit costume from Rabbit Costumes R Us and
oh, yeah.
little chocolate goodies out of the buttocks hole. Well, somebody called the SPCA.
Oh, no.
And yeah, and the next thing I know, I got some fat guy, you know, chasing me around with a net. So basically, my entire Easter was sitting home with a bottle of lotion and, oops, sorry, that's another story. And I just basically sat around for the rest of the day at Easter and didn't do really anything.
Well, thank God it was only a net and not a tranquilizer gun.
Yeah, it could have been bad if he had an elephant gun. I'd been really in serious trouble.
Well, on this show, we've got, of course, our UFO sightings from around the world.
And we've also got another mystery guest going to stop by and get up on our soapbox.
The CEO is going to get up and answer some questions from our members.
And then the Springinator gets a rant off his chest, finally, that's really been bugging him lately.
And then we're going to conclude with part two with our interview with author and ufologist Timothy Good.
And we end this episode with our favorite part of the show, the Rabbit's Rant, and this week it's a doozy.
That is for sure.
This is ATS Mix.
What? Whoa, whoa, what am I hearing?
What is this?
From AboveTopSecret.com.
Ah, crap!
Here are your anomalous sightings
from around the world.
These are the reported sightings over the United States. This is David C. In Illinois, after arriving home from work, a viewer caught a glimpse of light located in the northern sky above the tree line. As he walked to the front door of his home, the source of light appeared to be just above the trees. As he stepped onto the porch, the light stopped hovering above the trees and moved to within 10 feet of the porch at a height of about 10 feet. The viewer noted there was no noise. The light hovered there and then began emitting a sound. It went from a low tone to a high tone, then back to the low tone. The object then began to change color as the tone it was emitting began to change in pitch and length of tone. The object played the music for a period of time. Then it made two bright glows of a light blue light and suddenly became silent. It hovered there for a few seconds, then darted into the night sky at a high rate of speed. In Indiana, a woman and her daughter were driving home in Kokomo at 7:30 p.m. when they both noticed an orange ball of light flash on, then off seconds later while stopped at an intersection. Shortly thereafter, a second one appeared and performed the same on-again, off-again performance, illuminating for just a few seconds before going dark. It appeared to be at least a quarter held at arm's length in size. Minutes later, another orange ball of light appeared, this time to the far west, exhibiting the same characteristics but more distantly. Moments after it went out, another orange ball of light appeared through their tree line down lower to the horizon before going out. The witnesses described the orange ball of light as stationary, not moving laterally or vertically, and only illuminating for a few seconds apiece. Witnesses in Georgia observed a cigar-shaped object with a bright light in front, zigzagging above Winder, Georgia. It zigzagged through the air for about 2 to 3 minutes before appearing to stop, but the light kept getting dimmer and dimmer, as if it was going up. It looked like the lights were changing colors from white to yellow. Then the light that was thought to be in front of the object started going sideways. There was also a white haze reported to be around the object. This is David C., reporting for AboveTopSecret.com.
From Canada, this is Barb Campbell of SPPRC.com. HBCC UFO reports that on March 16th at 8 p.m., a witness was driving east into Oshawa on the 401, traveling around 100 kilometers an hour, where from the north side of the highway there was what appeared to be a diamond-shaped formation. The lights moved from the left side of the road, traveling towards Lake Ontario as they lined up in the middle of the road. There appeared to be several white lights, like industrial mercury lights, in a tight formation, perfectly symmetrical. 5 lights from one end to the other. They faded like lights on a dimmer switch as they traveled south. A jet passed from behind, and it appeared to be quite a distance higher than this group of lights. HBCC UFO is currently investigating a triangle sighting from Sudbury, Ontario. A man and his wife were about to get into the car and go out when they became aware of a loud noise, nothing like they've ever heard before. They looked up and then seen a triangular-shaped object moving very slow overhead. The man describes the object as having a neon-looking blue light in the center and orange lights at each point. HBCC UFO received a report that on January 6th at 11:10 p.m. southwest of Calgary, a man heard humming noises outside his window. It grew louder and then silent. His cat began to act rather peculiar. Then he noticed his automatic outdoor lights were not turned on, and that had him really spooked. When he went to put his garbage outside, that's when he noticed a bright light in the sky. It moved back and forth, and it was bigger than any other star. On March 13th, a rancher in Lloydminster, Alberta, was out feeding his herd of buffalo bulls when he discovered one of them laying dead in the field. Upon closer inspection, he found that the bull had his rectum completely cored and sex organs removed. There was no blood and no sign of any struggle. There was also no sign that anything had entered the field to the bull's location. The bull was the largest of the herd, weighing 1,780 pounds and stood 11 feet at his hump. He was 12 to 13 years old. This case is still under investigation by SPPRC Incorporated. Barb Campbell reporting for AboveTopSecret.com.
Reporting sightings from Europe, this is Sam Willey of AlienationSam.com and UFO-radio.net. This week, a high-intensity light over St. Taith, England, and a glowing ball of light over Manchester, England. We begin in St. Taith, England, at an event which occurred on March 6, 2008. The witness reported to MUFON that the incident occurred at around 11:30 p.m. whilst out watching the stars. Suddenly, the witness observed a single ball of high-intensity white light. It was described as being very fast, silent, and close to the ground. The witness reports it made him duck down as it got near, as it was only 25 to 30 feet off the ground. The witness was shaken by the encounter with the beach ball-sized object, which headed north towards the sea, going out of sight in seconds. MUFON have not offered any ideas as to what the object may have been. To Manchester now, and on March 1st, at 10:30 p.m, a witness described seeing a bright ball of orange-white light moving slowly over his location in Strange Ways, Manchester. He observed the object from his window and states the object seemed to have a plume of smoke coming from the top, and at first he thought it was a helicopter. The witness went to turn off all the lights in the room, and upon the return to the window, the light had faded to a red ember and suddenly vanished. The event lasted for 10 to 15 seconds, and the witness who reported the event to UFO Info hopes someone caught a picture of the activity. This is Sam Willey reporting for AboveTopSecret.com.
We've got ourselves some prominent folks from all around the world. They can say whatever they want from the soapbox.
Okay, John, let's see who's going to be up on the soapbox this time. Spin that wheel.
All right, here we go.
From the soapbox, it's, excuse me. Could you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, this is Robert Morningstar, editor of UFO Digest. Standing on the soapbox at ATS to expound on current events in ufology. Well, I have to say that the last year has been a momentous year, a watershed year in the history of ufology, and it looks to me that the history should be recapped, starting with the November 7th apparition of a UFO over O'Hare Airport, which kicked off the year. And this year full of curiosity and public interest, culminating through the year with the Washington, D.C. press conference that brought in Air Force leaders and pilots from other countries to demand disclosure, and the Stevensville sightings. I'd like to share with you some kind of political push moves that are happening in ufology. A lot of it has to do with mobilizing public opinion to actually become more actively engaged with politicians, to bring public pressure to bear to lead the government to disclose what they really know about UFOs. I had an interesting experience as the editor of UFO Digest, having been briefed on a purported meeting at the United Nations that was engaged in a proposal for a timetable to be achieved in arriving at worldwide disclosure. This came about as the result of the work of Clay and Shaw, Sean Pickering, and a source from Washington who wished to have this information leaked because the Stephenville sightings in particular, the mass sighting, has changed the equation in public perception. And so I guess the military has decided to get with the program and start to, well, own up to the fact that UFO is a reality. And as a result, some movements have been made politically, contacts made with other countries in the hope of bringing about a general UN policy change in regard to preparations for open contact with extraterrestrial presences that have been around the Earth for at least the last 60 years, kind of openly and more openly. And so on February 12th, there was a purported meeting at the United Nations to start the ball rolling for this policy change and a target date for disclosure by the end of 2009. And then preparations for contact with other races between 2013 and 2017. So let us hope for the best. Let us hope for someone in government and the White House who's willing to tackle this issue and own up to the American people. I asked for a few more minutes of time so that I could commemorate the life and the memory of Arthur C. Clarke, who passed away on March 19th. I'd like to point you to UFODigest.com for the memoriam that I wrote for Arthur C. Clarke, who I'm sure I speak for thousands, millions listening, changed all of our lives in a positive direction with his works. I would like to say that God has a sense of humor, you know, and synchronicity is how he shows his presence in my view of the world. And it's just an amazing coincidence that Arthur C. Clarke in the 1950s wrote a short story called The Star that told the story of a Jesuit astronomer who ventured far into outer space through hyperdimensional physics and arrived at this place where a supernova had occurred that had demolished and destroyed another civilization. And then he calculated the time that the light from that supernova would have taken to arrive at Earth, and he arrived at a marvelous conclusion, which I won't divulge in the hope that you'll read it. And so it happens that, strange coincidence, that the biggest gamma ray burst supernova in recorded history occurred on the day that Arthur C. Clarke passed away. And that was the big news for me on Saturday. But I received an email from Richard Hoagland informing me that they had measured 4 major gamma ray bursts that day, which is quite unheard of. Totally befitting the departure of such a great soul from the planet Earth. Remember Arthur C. Clarke. And that's Robert Morningstar from the Soapbox. Thank you, ATS.
We'll be back with more ATS Mix right after this brief message.
Dave Rabbit here again with the ATS Mix Show from AboveTopSecret.com. If you love politics and are tired of hearing and reading all that robotic crap that keeps churning out from the mainstream media, then come join me and thousands of people from around the world at AbovePolitics.com. They have political forums for everyone's taste, including U.S. politics, United Kingdom politics, Canadian politics, head-to-head political debates, politics of war. They have a general chit-chat and a freshman forum for you newbies and rookies to the political arena. There's also forums about Mideast conflict, socialism. They have a slugfest, liberalism, conservatism, moderate, and my personal favorite, military and security issues. So if you don't want to be another sheep and want to be a unique thinker, AbovePolitics.com is for you. Part of the Above Network, LLC. Deny apathy. AbovePolitics.com.
And now it's time for a different view. This is the Skeptic Overview.
And welcome back to the ATS Mix. We have with us, of course, Bill Irvin. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Oh, I'm stuffed with Easter eggs and chocolates.
I hope they weren't bad.
Well, as we promised everybody last week, this show you're going to tackle nothing but member questions.
Dun, dun, and,
dun. Which I know is your absolute favorite. We have one, your very first one for this particular show, Bill, is one from a band member, and his name was Dallas, And his question is, hi there, people, wondering if Skeptic Overlord has ever considered a suggestion box or thread for members with ideas about methods and standards in electing new moderators.
No.
Good.
Well then.
We pick the moderators all on our own. And that's, yeah, we observe what goes on and we pick the members from inside our secret circle. And if anyone who pays us $50,000 is on the fast track to being considered a moderator.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, let's be honest about this. I mean, because I think a lot of people want to know, we're picking people that have contributed to the site, have helped build our home here at AboveTopSecret.com, and have done on a consistent basis been level-headed in any kind of conversation. Now, isn't that really the bottom line on it?
Yeah, I'd say that's – everything you just said is perhaps 50 to 60% of it. The other part is just having portrayed a passion to promote where ATS is trying to be and promoting free expression – without all of the bad manners that you see on pretty much any other discussion board.
Right. All
well,
right, John?
Kaiser Sosi asked this question. Was there one specific conspiracy-based event or question that led you to the creation of this website? He obviously doesn't know that Simon created it.
Right.
Yes. Trying to figure out who Kaiser Sosi was. Well, there was no Kaiser Sosi if you saw the movie, right?
That is correct. He was an imagined Turkey assassin that didn't exist.
Who the hell? What movie is this?
What was the name of the movie? Kevin Spacey was...
Oh, the Usual Suspects.
Yes.
Oh, I love that movie. Yes. Where he plays the retard. What's the answer, Bill?
No, nothing specific. And Simon created the site. But with Simon, it started as an interest in secret military technology.
Pale Horse 23 wants to know, is there ever going to be a possibility of us having a newspaper or magazine edition of ATS?
No, and well, there may be special editions or special type products that we come out with once in a while, but anyone who pays attention to business knows that newspapers and magazines are losing money.
Yeah, and John Kennedy Jr. Proved that back when he was alive and had that that magazine that was really having some real problems.
Yeah, so it's...
What was that? Was that George?
George, yeah. Yeah, it was losing money big time, yeah.
And also going all the way up the rung, I mean, the New York Times is facing a stockholder revolt because they're just losing so much money.
Right.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Now, that's amazing that we live in a time nowadays to where somebody like the New York Times is really having problems. Does that
Well, the thing is, well, we're part of the problem, I think. There's been a study where people, most Americans, just simply do not feel that mainstream journalism is satisfying their needs. And they're going online to get more than what's just in the newspapers or on the nightly newscast.
I can't understand why anybody wouldn't want to listen about Anna Nicole Smith for a month and a half.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, every night I'm looking for my Britney fix, and when they don't have it on, I just turn off the news.
Well, I just have one thing to say. Can you say revolution?
Well, that's the plan, isn't it?
Ah.
Specs Ops Wannabe asked you this question, Bill. Have you ever considered creating an official news and investigation team and section for reporters only to write news articles, complete with photos and a professional look that has the feel of a major news agency like CNN or Fox News?
Yeah, we tried that once. We had ATSNN.com, the ATS News Network.
Right.
And it failed not so much because there wasn't good content, but because it was really difficult for the people involved. We had some editors and some writers, and they started to get a little bit too biased. And we really want ATS to maintain that neutral feel, and it was starting to get to the point where the drama resulting from some of the bias in the threads from the ATSNN editorial and staff was starting to detract from the topics that were trying to be covered. And it just felt better that we can have better a better conversation about the really important subjects by just letting our members take over and post news threads that they think are important.
All right. Member M. Gaunt says, just wondering how you personally have seen ATS evolve over the years, Bill, since you've been involved, from its assuredly humble start to what it has grown into now.
Wow, what is that, a one-hour question?
Yeah. depending on your response time may depend on whether we answer any more.
The fast forward version is when I first got involved soon before 9/11. I mean, Simon didn't even have his own discussion board. He was on Easy Board. Soon after that, he installed the discussion board system on the site he was hosting. It would have been 2003. The site started to get so popular, he was maxing out his hosting plan with his providers. So that's where I jumped in and started to offer some help. And it's been pretty much the case ever since then, where every 6 months we've needed some kind of technology upgrade or technology improvement or infusion of expertise to twist something to work better in one particular way. So, yeah, it's been a phenomenal uphill battle that, and even right now, you know, we thought 6 months ago, hey, we got some great hardware, we can handle things, and what do you know? Just like everything has been happening over the past 5 years, it's 6 months later, and we're looking at a new upgrade again.
Did the servers last on our last ATS Mix Radio podcast download?
Yes, I believe they did. It was a little stressed, but, you know, you guys put up, what, 120 gigabyte file?
Oh, I knew we were going to get slammed on the show sooner or later. Yeah, it was a little large. But now the Johninator, who's doing all the post-production work, I got to tell the membership, I mean, has done just a masterful job. And I want to officially give you kudos on above the scene as opposed to behind the scenes, John, because...
Eyebrows are still burnt off in the behind the scenes.
Talk about a massive amount of work to do a radio format show and not be live is just horrendous. It really is. So kudos, John.
Thanks, buddy. Teeter Wright, I believe that's how you would pronounce his name, wants to ask you this, Bill. What is the skeptic overlord's opinion about John Teeter? And I believe he's referring to the supposed time traveler, John Teeter.
Time travel_01 was his original username way back
in the day.
In the day, 2000, early 2000s, when he first posting. I think it's a hoax, complete hoax. Somebody just got overzealous. There's a couple photos too. And if you go into the thread, John Teeter is a hoax. In the photos, it's clearly definable that it's all a hoax. So it's interesting. It's an interesting study how something can just overwhelm a particular segment of the online culture like Teeter has. But still, that's about as interesting as I think it is.
All right, we're going to end with, I think, really an appropriate question that I think it's time that we address. And Bill, being the CEO, I think it's your place to address it, because my response would be with a 2x4. Creepy 81. What's with the commercials on the Mix Show lately promoting AbovePolitics.com and BelowTopSecret.com? Doesn't seem right to me. If one is interested in politics or whatever is in Below Top Secret, one will find it on one's own. I get that you have a business to operate, but did you get to 1 million unique vehicle visitors through ads? No. So if you want a juicy cheeseburger, I will find one on my own. I don't want to find an ad for McDonald's on ATS that says, get your burgers here. You want integrity from your members, and as members, we deserve integrity from you. My question to you, Skeptic Overlord, is how far are you willing to go to make a buck?
Sorry. Yeah, Bill, how far?
I have no idea how you really feel about this, Johnny and David.
Before you answer, may I just simply put one insertion in, minor insertion? How much is your membership costing you?
Right. You know what? I'm willing to go really, really far to make a buck, because all our bucks go toward promoting ATS and making the revolution happen. Right. Some of the things that we're trying to do, like get you guys on terrestrial radio, get a book published, get some television work started, expand into the video realm, and get our members pay into so many other channels other than just this website, all of that costs money. And we need to find a way that helps us make the money we need to make that all happen. That being said, Above Politics and Below Top Secret, we're promoting our own properties on our own radio show. I don't see anything wrong with that. Do you guys?
No.
No, in Creepy, I want to say that I'm not making fun of your brother, but here's the deal. We want people to understand that there's more to our home at the Above Network LLC than just AboveTopSecret.com. Now, that's Yanni's and my venue, and that's what Bill likes, and Simon, and, of course, the Markaroo. But there's a lot of people that may just want to be entertained. And below TopSecret.com, we want people to start learning about that particular part of the site, as well as, if they really enjoy politics and are tired of the mainstream media, the Above Politics site. So it's not a matter of us trying to make more money in cross-promotion. It's a matter of educating the millions of people that are coming to the site that have no clue what our family's about.
We don't like to reveal specific, but here's a stats for you. The cost of the hardware that keeps ATS running on a monthly basis is more than the typical maximum credit line on many people's credit cards.
Yeah, there you go.
From a serious standpoint, to respond to this question, is we want to be, we're trying really hard to be in that minority of companies that people can say, yes, they still have integrity, even though they accept advertising.
Yep, there you go. There you be. All right, Bill, thanks for your time, brother.
All right.
See you soon.
Later, boys.
Bye. Bye.
We'll be back with more ATS Mix right after this brief message.
This is Agent X. You may know me as the secret informant for Dave and Johnny's ATS Mix show. What a lot of you may not know is that I chose their show because AboveTopSecret.com is the only website out there that covers all the subjects that I love, whether it's a conspiracy about 9/11 or the secret United Nations meetings with extraterrestrials. I know I'm going to get the need-to-know updated information that I crave. I'd tell you more, but then I'd have to kill you. X out.
Now, from the very top of AboveTopSecret.com, it's time to catch up with Springer, a.k.a. Mark Allen. This is Springer Sprung.
This segment is being brought to you by Maker's Mark, the drink of champions. When is the best time to enjoy a drink? Well, according to Springer, it's always 5 o'clock somewhere in the world.
We have with us, of course, Springer. Hi, Springer. How you doing?
How's it going, guys?
2 weeks ago, actually, you said, I'm never going to talk about things that piss me off because I just don't want to do a rant. The Springinator and I talk almost every day. He can rant 10 times better than the Davester because when he really gets into a rant, he gets so passionate about stuff, it'll just blow you away. So let's hear what's pissing you off, Mark.
Oh, my God. After that intro, I'm screwed.
That was the reason why I did it, because if you suck.
You know what really pisses me off? Overblown intros. No, I'm kidding.
No, but I'm bummed.
Now, I do want to verify that I didn't say never want to talk about the stuff that really pisses me off.
Okay,
but I did say I wanted to avoid it, see, right there. But unfortunately, I can't, because this is really pissing me off.
Okay, what is it?
And what it is for months we've had this back and forth with people who are just, you know, adamant about talking about illegal drug use on our site, specifically marijuana. I got a news flash for you. You go spend 10 years building a site, putting your heart, soul, and money into it, and hoping to God one day it'll pay for itself, and you finally get it to that point, and then a bunch of people just call you every name in the book and get on your ass about not allowing them to talk about marijuana. Out of all the things there are to talk about in this world, you can talk about damn near every one of them on AboveTopSecret.com. Am I right, guys?
Yeah, correct. They need to go to Cheech and Chong's website if they want to do that.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. Net nannies and the corporate site blockers and all that, we have survived, and I'm pretty sure we're one of maybe 10 real big discussion sites that have survived by not being blocked from those sites. And the fact that we're not blocked from those sites is how we can afford to pay for the site, because we get the traffic. If we allow people to talk about this one stupid subject, okay, which we have done in the past, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But if we allow people to talk about that subject, and the conversation denigrates to what I like to call stonologues, and it's, you know, and basically personal use and exploits under the influence, we will be instantaneously blocked on the next sweep from these net nannies and these corporate and school and university and library services. There goes the traffic. There goes the ability to continue to pay for AboveTopSecret.com at the expense of a handful of people who just want to smoke dope and babble about it. All right?
Right.
Now, well, there's another group that came up, and they're so transparent that this is what I'm really pissed off about. We really calmed everybody down about the whole Reefer Madness thing. You know, they got it. They said, wow, you know what? That makes sense. Thanks for explaining it. Well, then we got a new batch of them in, the hemp advocates. And these guys, yeah, these guys are coming in, and they are, you know, just railing against us because we won't let them discuss hemp in the public forums. We do have a, you know, a forum called Really Above Top Secret that is blocked from the search bots and therefore impervious to the, you know, negative effects of net nannies and all those things.
Yeah, the restrictions.
That with enough contribution and membership and good standing, you can earn the points to get access to that. And we do allow the discussion of industrial values and environmental, you know, virtues of hemp. But in the public boards, for 10 years, we watched the conversation would start out about that, and inevitably, it would denigrate into, man, I got the coolest bong last week, and we were toking down, and I puked on my shoes, you know, wow. Invariably. So last week, my Google News alert goes off, and some guy has a blog, all right?
All right.
And I guess he got it tied into the Google News thing somehow. And a completely separate site, a Google News alert that says, AboveTopSecret.com considers itself a conspiracy theory website? Ha! They won't even let us talk about hemp! They're going out into the world now crying about this.
Well, good, because you know what they say? There's no bad press.
Oh, of course. Just spell the name right. It's AboveTopSecret.com.
Well, that's because he's stoked up, dude.
Well, if it's the transparency is just so obvious, because this particular group, this hemp culture, I have personally never met one of those guys that didn't partake of the herb. And, you know, I have no problem with people that partake of the herb as long as they, you know, contribute to society, take care of themselves, and take care of their families. You know, that's their business.
Right.
But give us a break.
Well, you know, Johnny and I actually discussed a thread, God, months ago, out of the 80 shows. If I'm not mistaken, Johnny, correct me if I'm wrong, their basic contention was that they used to make rope out of hemp back in the Civil War days. And
well, we used hemp rope in the Coast Guard cutter that I was on in the 80s. That thread is a classic example of what I'm talking about, because that was like a year ago.
Yeah.
And it denigrated to a stoner log, and we had to close it.
But, you know, at least we got to, you know, do a bit out of it before you guys closed it, because I really think it's one of my favorite bits, don't you, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, maybe it's not. Okay, well, is that all that's pissing you off, is this particular thread? Now, can we look – let me ask you a question. Can we look forward to more Markaroo's rants on things that piss you off on the site?
God, I would hope not, but, you know, life is what life is, so it's probably going to be inevitable.
Okay, so we're either – so we can pretty much determine that we're either going to talk about aliens or things that piss you off, right?
Well, no. You know, as you two well know, we have a lot of upcoming huge projects that occupy my time, and I'm looking forward to, you know, talking extensively about those, but obviously until we get, you know, all the paperwork done and everything else, we can't discuss them, so.
Well, I was more referring to, you know, you start talking about, you know, stories of you and Honda playing, you know, Indian games up there in the territory.
yeah, that's exciting.
Oh, you told me one day you called up and said that you and Honda dressed up in the little outfits and, you know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, sorry. I forget we're live.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess that's it for this.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
that's all I got, guys.
All right. Well, listen.
He spent.
Give her. Yeah. Don't go there. give our love to Honda, and we'll see you next week then.
Will do, guys. Have a great one.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you like what we discussed, you're going to love AboveTopSecret.com. I can tell you, AboveTopSecret.com's members and staff, they're top-notch. They're smart, current, articulate, and would you believe they're even polite? In fact, AboveTopSecret.com is world-renowned for its excellent management. And since they're one of the best boards on the Internet with thousands of posts every day, you know they're doing it right. They've also got a hilarious podcast called ATS Mix, hosted by legendary Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, that covers all the hottest AboveTopSecret.com topics and conspiracy rumors. AboveTopSecret.com has dozens of forums, from UFOs and aliens to conspiracies, paranormal, and much, much more. So much more that I don't have time to name them all. Take it from me, AboveTopSecret.com is worth your time, because with more than 3 million posts on more than a quarter million topics, the truth is in there. So stop by AboveTopSecret.com and tell them I sent you. You can thank me tomorrow.
The following is an ATS Mix exclusive interview.
Part 2.
If there are recovered bones, skulls, obviously that... Oh, yeah. This has probably been going on for quite a while. The question comes up, why is it that these crafts seem to crash then? Are we shooting them down, or are they having trouble in our atmosphere?
Well, both. Both.
Yeah?
In the early days. Now, it doesn't happen. I don't know what's happening now, except that we are developing very sophisticated weaponry to counter the alien threat that's posed by some species. There is a conflict situation. The conflict started, in my opinion, in shortly after the Second World War, and we shot several of these things down. You're familiar with the famous February 1942 case, when they fired, the U.S. Army fired 1,430 rounds of ammunition at anti-aircraft shells at this large craft, and there's smaller ones as well.
Are you talking about in Los Angeles? In Los Angeles, right. Yes, of course.
It was observed by a million people and officially confirmed by General George Marshall, for heaven's sake.
Right.
Now, there was another one recovered earlier than that in 41, as I mentioned. There were several. There was one in 1944 in Hawaii, other areas. 1945, it's very interesting. I referred to that case in Colorado, of a craft that knocked one of our aircraft that tried to shoot it. Maybe it did come down, but... Certainly in August 1945, there was the Army, U.S. Army Air Forces, retrieved a crashed UFO in New Mexico, San Antonito. This is described very briefly in the book, and I met one of the witnesses. They were boys at the time. It's a long story, but a craft was recovered, and these boys saw the alien bodies before they were taken away by the military. So... And, of course, New Mexico was the focus. And in 1947, I say it was the focus because that was where the Americans first exploded their atomic bomb.
Atomic bomb, right.
In 1947, in April, May 1947, the Americans began test flying the V-2 rockets that they had captured from the Nazis.
Right.
Together with a whole team headed by Wernher von Braun. That this much is known. You know, the Russians also captured some, but the Americans got the best scientists. And they started test launching the V-2 rockets at White Sands Proving Grounds, New Mexico. And this led to, in May 1947, this led to, and I've been able to prove this with contemporary news accounts, what happened was that as soon as these things started their test flights, they were being buzzed by flying discs. And the Americans, on one occasion at least, it's proven that these phenomena, as they were referred to, actually caused a rocket to prematurely crash, to come down much earlier than its intended flight, programmed flight. And the Americans retaliated by firing at discs. They resolved to get more of these discs down. They started firing at them, not just with ordinary anti-aircraft shells, but with proximity fuse guided missiles, which only explode when the missile actually gets close to the target.
Sure.
And they actually succeeded in those early days in knocking some of these craft out of the skies. That's why I think that Roswell was one of those incidents that was an actual craft that we had shot down. And there was another one at the same time, or it's very, very muddy, the whole business about the crash sites in New Mexico at that time. As you know, there are probably three different crash sites. They're then, on a worldwide level, not just in the United States, but throughout the world, there was retaliation by those alien forces. They began knocking our planes out of the sky, preventing them from taking off. And I'm not just talking about military planes, but I've airliners, sometimes unable to get off the ground, crashed at the end of the runway. Airliners were crashing. And this was absolutely shocking, even to me, when I realized the scale of it. And this is thanks to a guy called John Andy Kistner, who was a state representative for New Mexico, Republican representative a while back. And also, he served in the aerospace industry. And he's done a lot of research, and he has very good contacts, and he's found out a lot of information, and he kindly passed this to me for publication in Need to Know, and I've reproduced some of the newspaper articles, which show that, first of all, in May 1947, a rocket was knocked out of the sky by a peculiar phenomena. That was confirmed by the base commander at White Sands. And also, I've got an article, I think, from one of the contemporary papers showing that there were hundreds of crashes, worldwide disasters. President Truman holds emergency meetings and everything.
Hmm.
And of course, it's never occurred to anybody that the extent of these crashes really absolutely alarming. And how, you know, there again, Johnny, you know, how can any government come out with these facts? I mean, how, especially at that time. I mean, it was one of the generals who was responsible for organizing the containment strategy, General Clements McMullen, together with Truman, they agreed that there was no way, you know, he said, you know, we'd just been through World War II with destruction on an unprecedented scale, firebombing of great cities, nuclear bombs on Japan. Then came this flying saucer business. It was simply too much for the public to have to deal with, and they were right.
Right.
And they're still all right, especially if there have been occasions when aircraft have still been, harassed by these things.
It's just mind-boggling. I have to ask you this. You seem to have amassed a wide network of contacts and insiders. I'm curious, do these folks come to you, or do you seek them out?
Both, but it doesn't usually... You've got to be very, very careful because, you know, if you're dealing with the most sensitive subject on this planet, no one's going to give you information easily, and it doesn't come easily.
Sure.
And sometimes the most I get, you know, in the space of a couple of years will be a hint from someone, and I might be passed to somebody else, and I'll get another hint from somebody else. But these people, unless they have been given permission, to encourage things, and I was told that, certainly, regarding all that information I got about the alien bases and the fact that there was a liaison going on and had been for some while and everything, it's kind of like a safety valve.
Right.
Several journalists or writers, if you like, including myself, I'm not the only one that's been given this information. Even long time ago, when I started to acquire this information, there were a few other journalists who, you know, the information, the basics are in place. In the event of something unprecedented happening. So, you know, you have to sort of cushion. There has to be a sort of safety net there somewhere.
Has there been occasions that have arisen that where perhaps one of your contacts in your network or something has disappeared because of passing along maybe too much information?
Well, I can't go into that too deeply, but what I can say is that just as sometimes they are encouraged to speak, at other times, they are encouraged to stay well away from me, and that can be very sad because over very long time, one forms friendships with these people, and you respect them, and you never push them for information. And
I'm sure,
but you have to realize the dangerous position anyone is in. You know, having that sort of knowledge, that sensitive knowledge.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what. We don't need to go any further on that, and I'll respect that. I'll tell you what. Why don't we go into a few member questions here? I think this would probably be a good time to do that.
Okay.
Our members and listeners at AboveTopSecret.com were just extremely pleased to hear that we were going to be doing an interview with you, and they came out with a number of questions. One of our members, excuse me, by the name of Space Visitor, says this: I have read some of your very interesting articles in the once-existed British UFO magazine, and of course, your excellent books such as Alien Base and Unearthly Disclosure. I have listened more than once to your also very interesting interviews on Coast to Coast and elsewhere, and personally, I find you to be one of the best UFO extraterrestrial phenomena investigators in the field. I have two questions for you, Mr. Good, if I may, and one is, I have heard more frequently from other investigators and insiders about the real possibility that we humans are, in a way, the creation of the extraterrestrial groups by means of some form of genetic manipulation. What is your opinion of that?
Yes, is the answer.
Short and sweet.
Definitely. I was told this many, many years ago, not by any government official. You can learn a lot from people who've had contact with some of these visitors.
Right.
I was told that a long time ago, I don't know exactly when it started, but I think at the time of Homo erectus, when man gradually started to stand up and we sort of developing from the ape family, that's, I think, there was a contactee in 1920 was told that, Albert Coe in Canada, who had actually rescued a guy who had come to grief, his craft had come to some, he had come to grief in Canada. I can't go into all the details right now. It's in Alien Base anyway. He was told that it went back to that period when they colonized Earth, having previously colonized Mars and Venus. Things went wrong there, and they needed to come to Earth, and they colonized this planet way, way back at that period, and this led to Homo sapiens. So yes is the answer. Absolutely. I think that one day this will be a proven fact. There'll be absolutely no argument about it, about the missing link.
Well, speaking of proven fact and disclosure, a listener and member by the name of Smagallo wants to know what your opinions are on Stephen Greer and the Disclosure Project.
Well, it, on the face of it, it appeared to be a noble project, but it would have done very well. It would have been successful if Stephen Greer hadn't had his own agenda. That's my feeling about it, and he misrepresented quite a number of the military guys, and that upset them. I mean, they got out of it, actually, at the time, when they realized that, I mean, for example, Lord Hill Norton, who's written the foreword to my book, he's a former chief of defense staff, and so forth. Greer keeps referring to him as head of the MI5, head of MI6, head of the British Ministry of Defense. None of those were his positions. And when you have a press conference like that and people are misrepresented, it doesn't really help. And then he has his own agenda, his own spin on, you know, they're keeping energy from us and this and that. You know, I think it could have been a great success had it been handled with someone with a smaller ego.
And now it appears to just be tainted.
Yes, I think so. I mean, you know, there's a disclosure program still going. Exopolitics is the new flavor of the month. But there again, there are people who have their own agenda, and you know, you have to try and sort of sit back from this and just let the evidence present itself. The most successful thing to date, and a good example of the way to do it, is the way that Leslie Kane and Freedom of Information Group got together these military witnesses from all over the world. Last November, as you know, there was a conference at the National Press Club in Washington, and there were some really good witnesses there. Pilots, there were heads, military chiefs, there was the guy Callahan, all sorts of people who had been involved. There was Colonel Holt, who had been deputy base commander at Woodbridge and Bentwaters when this thing came down. There was Jim Peniston, who actually touched the object.
The object, yeah. In fact, I have
when it, yeah.
I have a short sidebar here. I was talking to our friend from UFO Digest, Robert Morningstar, and he said that he actually got a chance to touch a impression that was made from one of the depressions from the ground, and they had made a plaster of Paris of that, and he actually got to touch that.
Holt did that, actually.
Yes, yes, he did.
Yes, he did, absolutely. Yes, I know people that saw it. The Birdsall brothers certainly saw it when many years ago when Holt gave a lecture up in Yorkshire about that case. So yes, but that was a very, very difficult to rubbish all those high caliber witnesses.
Oh, sure.
The Peruvian Air Force guy, you know, that was international too. The French government people, Nick Pope, who'd headed sort of UFO desk in the MOD 1991 to 1994. And the pilots who'd had really close, disturbing close encounters with UFOs. My favorite one is the Peruvian Air Force guy who in 1980 tried to shoot down a UFO. He fired 64 30-millimeter shells at the UFO. This was near an Air Force base in Peru. And he thought they'd hit directly, but they had no effect. He said they seemed to be absorbed by some kind of field, it's postulated, you know, but... very, very interesting. Cases like that, one after the other. I mean, you've seen the transcript, I'm sure.
Sure.
I could go on, but it was very difficult for the mainstream news channels to rubbish that. I mean, not that they didn't have a go, but it was difficult for them to do so. So I think the Washington Post kind of ignored it. But of course, as soon as Denis Kucinich came up with, you know, having seen a UFO, with you know Shirley MacLaine's, I think he's godfather to her child. You know, that was the end of Kucinich, and it's been ridiculed. It's still being ridiculed. You know,
right.
You can see.
And he's being labeled as a kind of a kook now.
All he'd said was that he saw an unidentified flying object.
Exactly.
But interestingly, there were very serious articles in a number of good papers, not in the super establishment papers. You weren't, I mean, did you see a serious article about that conference in the New York Times or the Washington Post? No,
did
not, and you will not.
Right.
Neither will you in the Daily Telegraph, which is our top establishment.
Sure.
But, I mean, the media, of course, is manipulated by vested interests. I mean, since time immemorial, nothing new about that. So there's nothing new there, but I was pleased to see some of the more independent papers come up with non-ridiculing articles. And that press conference in November, I think, has had far more positive effect.
Positive effect, you bet.
Than the Disclosure Project.
We have another member by the name of Transonic who says this. Hello, Mr. Good. I am interested in a case that occurred at Dublin Airport in which a B-747 and I believe an Airbus landing on runway 38 were buzzed by a black triangle, resulting in damage to the skin of the 747. I understand the 747 was then sent back to the United States for repairs. Do you have any information on this case? And I believe this is what you were mentioning earlier, right?
Well, this is published... in my book for the first time. It also came out with another book, an Irish book, by the two principal investigators, Dermot Butler and Carl Nally, who are Ireland's leading researchers. They gave me this information. It did not involve a 747. It started off, it was 8:30 p.m., 4th of January, 2004. Okay. An Aer Lingus Boeing 737, I've got the registration number here, with 135 people on board, was approaching the east coast of Ireland, 15 nautical miles from the Ashbourne very high frequency omnidirectional range beacon before landing at Dublin. And it was also the 737 was being followed in for landing on runway 10 by a British Midland Airbus A330 at a distance of 6 miles. Both aircraft with an altitude of 3,000 feet, speeds 250 knots. As the 737 approached a certain area north of the Dublin airport, north 30 miles north, the crew behind in the A330 Airbus observed unidentified traffic take off vertically from a field. Very bright strobe lights, triangular in shape. the triangular UFO began to circle the 737, and the crew of the 737 experienced a power drain on their aircraft. Now, this information was given to me by Carl Nally and, as I say, Dermot Butler. Carl is a private pilot, so he had access to this information. At this point, the crew members of the A330 Airbus observed a purplish glow surrounding the Aer Lingus 737. As the UFO flew in front of the 737 at the same altitude and a short distance in front of them, the captain requested a vector heading to avoid collision. They were given an 8-degree vector to avoid the UFO, as the air traffic control had the UFO on radar. The 737 captain filed a near miss with air traffic control. The UFO angled off to the port side, creating a huge wake turbulence. It was experienced as the 737 was violently shaken and the outside air temperature rose to plus 164 degrees centigrade as the huge UFO scorched through the air. And this was shown, obviously, on the internal systems display digital readout. And this lasted about 15 seconds. All this was witnessed by the Airbus bus crew, who also themselves experienced some of the wake turbulence.
Hmm.
When the Aer Lingus landed, the crew could not raise the speed brake spoilers on the wing more than a quarter of the distance up. They were then requested to go to a certain stand by the air marshal. The aircraft was examined, wings found to be badly damaged as if dented by a hammer. There was also aircraft skin damage and hydraulic damage to the speed brakes. Pilots were then told to go home for 2 days. Now, 2 hours later, a very similar incident happened again, this time also involving an A330, but this was leased from an American company called Atlas Air and chartered by Air Tours with 213 people on board. And just as in the previous incident I've described, the plane was approaching the East Coast, bound for Dublin Airport, when the crew observed a flashing strobe light over the Slane area. That's 30 miles north of Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
This is Carl continues. He's saying, you know, as they throttled back at 2,500 feet, the UFO took on a triangular shape and was now right in front of the aircraft and gave off a continuous, very bright flashing light like a camera flash. The crew were advised by air traffic control to vector 10 degrees to avoid the UFO. As they began to take up the new heading, the UFO began to circle the aircraft in a very aggressive manner. The crew were terrified and expected a collision with the UFO, which was approximately 360 feet in wings in span.
Hmm.
As the craft continued its aggressive maneuvers, the aircraft's interior lights grew dim from a power drain, and at this point, the captain drew the attention of the passengers to the strange craft circling the airplane. The passengers had already been observing this and are now beginning to feel panicked. This went on for 8 to 10 minutes, and at one terrifying point, the wake turbulence from the huge UFO shook the aircraft violently and activated the wind shear warning device. All through this aircraft, this episode, other aircraft in the area were observing the encounter and listening into the radio transmissions between air traffic control and the Airbus. Anyway, it did land safely, thank heavens, unlike the previous one, which landed with damage. But in any event, all the crews involved were badly shaken. They were sworn to silence, threats were made, so on right. and so forth. Everything is officially denied, but I trust those two sources of mine.
And, incredible.
There's no way, you know, just as you thought it was getting safe to go back into airliners again, you know, you can't, you know, you expect President Bush to make an announcement or Gordon Brown, our Prime Minister. I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think they're right to cover it up. But what I'm skeptical about, I'm sure there is a reasonable explanation for it, is that to the best of my knowledge, none of the passengers has come forward yet. And I put out, I went to Dublin to sort of study all the research material that Carl and Dermot had accumulated
right.
since they'd been investigating this thing, and I was interviewed by a Dublin reporter, and I sort of appealed for information, you know, to all information to be treated confidentially, but I don't think we've got any more at the moment, but... You know, keeping in, you know, keep posted, try and keep you posted if I hear any more. But
yeah, that would be great.
That does sort of give rise to skepticism, and anyone is skeptical about the case. But on the other hand, knowing how information can be kept quiet, I keep an open mind.
Sure. We're down to our last three questions. This one came by email and asked me specifically to not mention their name. They want to.
Well, none of the previous callers has mentioned their name.
This anonymous person emailed this to me and said for me to ask this. And he or she says this: there seems to be those from the Christian, Judeo-Christian community that believe that these beings and or events are nothing less than part of a larger plan implemented by some type of demonic presence. In any of your research, have you come across anything that might lead one to say that there could possibly be something to this, or maybe even an agenda in play here? And what would you base your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I'd need some sort of more specific question,
right.
Really. I mean, is the supposition here that the Judeo-Christian, some people from that religion who are saying that the whole thing is demonological? Well, not the whole thing. That's nonsense. That's very woolly-minded, in my opinion. I do think, however, that there could well be demonic forces involved. That's another question. So I would not rule that out by any means. Having experienced phenomena like that, I think there could well be a connection with the so-called when we talk about angels and demons, their words.
Sure.
And I think there is something to that, and I think many religions recognize that there are demonic forces, just as there are angelic, if you like, or very highly spiritual forces at work in the universe.
Right.
A conflict of interests, if you like.
Absolutely. A member by the name of Synthesis asked this: Mr. Good, have you ever had an experience with an alien yourself? And if so, could you elaborate about it, when this occurred, and what you actually experienced? Did you talk to him?
Good question, Synthesis. I have written about some of my encounters. I'll sort of try and keep them short. But yes, I have, I would say, had about four encounters. The first two were in the United States. The first was in 1963 when I was touring, and one of the bus journeys was from Tucson to Los Angeles, okay? This was with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, a convoy of three Greyhound-type buses. And we stopped at a place on the border of Arizona and California for a break to
sure.
get some food, which was kind of them to give us a stop, since it's a 512-mile trip, as I recall. Anyway, I noticed when I was with some colleagues from the orchestra sitting at a table, and I noticed, waiting in line, an extraordinary-looking girl. And people say at this point, oh, come on, Tim, you know, you fancied anything. Well, she just looked extraordinarily intelligent and slightly unusual, very unusual skin. She was petite, relatively small, and I just had the feeling that she was unusual. So I sent out in my mind, telepathically, to her, directing the telepathy toward her. I said, if you're from another planet or wherever, please give me some confirmation. Well, nothing happened, but as she came out of the line, she made a point of coming by my table, and my colleagues were there. They saw all this. She had a very deadpan expression on her face, but
right.
suddenly she put on a sweet smile and did a deep bow straight at me, and then stood up, and her face again became deadpan, and she headed off to the other part of the restaurant. I never saw her again.
Wow.
Other than that, it was very, very interesting, because her appearance was very similar to one of the space girls described in George Adamski's Inside the Spaceships. And so, you know, I just wondered. And then when the bus left, here's another coincidence. I noticed that the nearest actual big area was Desert Center, which is where George Adamski and his colleagues had that encounter back in November of 1952. So I thought that was interesting. Then in February 1967, I was with the London Symphony Orchestra by that time. I was with that orchestra for 14 years. And we were doing a series of concerts at the Carnegie Hall. And I had been visiting Madeline Rodifer, who's still alive today. And if any of you want her phone number to talk to her, she herself had some encounters. She was present when that extraordinary movie film was taken by Adamski at her house with, I believe, to be U.S. government officials of some status. I don't know what precisely, but that film is genuine. And I know that often it's shown on television. It looks just like a three-dimensional object. You may have seen it. It was taken on the 26th of February, 1965. It is absolutely genuine. It's been authenticated by Bill Sherwood, an optical physicist, who took Adamski to the Kodak company not long after the film. And they examined it there and then, and they thought it was genuine. And then in 1998, this is another story, I was invited to the Pentagon by the director of the Defense Airborne Reconnaissance Office, which was part of the National Reconnaissance Office at that time, which handled the unmanned spy planes. And during that sort of presentation there, I gave a mini presentation, and they gave me one about UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles. General Israel, who was the director of the Defense Airborne Reconnaissance Office, has told me that, in his opinion, that Adamski film was genuine. And he made a point of telling the assembled gathering that. So that's interesting. But anyway, back to 1967, February, I had met quite a number of people who had encounters with human-type beings who were highly telepathic. So I was advised by Madeline to try an experiment in New York, because I was getting frustrated.
Sure.
I hadn't had any more contact or experience since 1963. So one afternoon, between a rehearsal and a concert at Carnegie Hall, I sat down in the lobby of what was then the Park Sheraton Hotel. It's not called that now, but it's sort of around 8th Avenue, 57th Street. And I sent out in my mind, I said, look, okay, any of you guys or girls from elsewhere in the New York area, please come and sit down next to me and prove it. I really need some solid evidence or proof.
I want to interrupt you just real quick. Yes. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to talk with Timothy a little more about aliens, and we'll do that right after this brief word.
Are you ready for a close encounter of the tinfoil kind and want to do some collaborative writing with some of the most intelligent people on planet Earth? Then go to our board home at AboveTopSecret.com and find tinwiki.org in the Conspiracy Theory Discussion Forum area. TinWiki is an online encyclopedia where members can create new pages and where every page can be edited by anyone reading the page and wanting to improve it. The TinWiki Encyclopedia is for a specific type of topics only, such as conspiracy theories, UFOs, ghosts, paranormal phenomena, mythological creatures, lost civilizations, and life on other planets, just to name a few. So join thousands of other ATS members in creating an encyclopedia of AboveTopSecret.com articles that will be viewed by millions of members and guests from around the world. And if you happen to see William Wonsack or Optimus, tell them Dave Rabbit sent you.
Has it been confirmed that you have perhaps some telepathic powers yourself? Or
I think we all have. To agree.
Okay.
I don't think I have any special telepathic powers.
But okay.
I can tell you these guys certainly do.
Sure. Okay.
And that is one of the main distinguishing features, actually.
Right.
Because, you know, they don't have bug, at least the ones I know about don't have bug eyes and tentacles and,
right.
and so on and so forth. There are many different species, of course, but I'm talking about the more human types with whom we are related.
Okay.
Anyway, finally this guy comes in. And he's immaculate, about 5'10", straight out of Madison Avenue,
right.
dark charcoal suit, immaculately fitting, white, crisp white shirt, dark tie, wavy, sandy-colored hair, tanned. He was wearing glasses. He came and sat down beside me. Okay, so I thought, right. He then had an attaché case. He opened it slowly. He took out the New York Times, and he very slowly, page by page, turned over the pages so that within a few minutes he'd gone through the whole paper, and he folded it, put it back in his attaché case, right? So in my mind's eye, I said, right, if you're the man I'm looking for, take your right finger and hold it beside your nose and keep it there. No sooner had I thought that, he did exactly that, and he kept it there. So then I'm thinking to myself, geez, what do I do now? You know, I mean, people say, why didn't you talk to him? Well, there's two sides to that. First of all, you know, I was quite young at the time, relatively young.
Right.
And, you know, there's a saying, you know, that the Brits don't speak to anyone unless they've been introduced. That's really not true, but it's a lovely story. You know? But anyway, the point is, I did not feel like speaking. I tried a bit more telepathy. Nothing happened. He just sat there for quite a long time. Eventually, of course, he took his right. I don't think I should have said, did I say the right index finger?
I believe so.
I was quite specific. Hold your right index finger to your right part of your side of your nose. And that's exactly what he did anyway. But he sat there for a while. I guess he was just, I don't know, sizing me up, analyzing me. I don't know. But anyway, eventually he got up. He looked at me very seriously, very intelligently for a while, and then he walked to another part of the lobby, and eventually he left. I'd recognize him if I saw him again. Anyway, that was very interesting, and it really was a tremendous inspiration, cathartic, if you like. I mean, it changed my approach to the subject, and it was the proof I needed, even if it's of no consequence to anybody else. I mean, I'm just saying that's exactly what happened. It could have been coincidence, but that's what happened.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful form of a personal confirmation for you.
Yeah. And just one, if I can talk about, just the most recent one.
Sure, please.
I can't go into too many details. It was in a certain country in Europe. I was there partly for a conference, partly for... I'd been invited to a meeting to give a talk on my subject to a group of retired politicians, military people, doctors, university professors, you name it. They were all there, about 80 of them. It's quite a sort of distinguished club. And it was the first time the subject had been debated. There was somebody there that I thought looked quite interesting, and I was sending out a few telepathic thoughts. Again, he was immaculately dressed, dark sort of charcoal suit, and what you Americans call a vest, we call a waistcoat.
I see.
And not many people wear those, you know, right. Not really terribly fashionable, but he looked very smart. And he was one of the last people, after I'd given my presentation, it was a debate, and he was the last person to speak during the debate. And the weird thing is, I cannot remember what was said, and nor could a few other people in the room at the time. We certainly remembered it when he was talking. But anyway, immediately afterwards, I thought, well, you know, I'm always criticized. People say, Tim, why didn't you talk to them? So what did I do? I waited till he came actually past me, and I gave him my business card, and I looked him in the eye. I held out my hand to shake it, which he just took hold of my hand. He didn't shake it at all. I mean, it was just like a cold fish.
Right.
And he just looked at me in the eye, and I said to him, I think you have a great deal of knowledge. And he just looked at me as if I was something the dog had brought in. And that was it. And he walked away. I've never heard from him. So the upshot, Johnny, of the whole thing, why didn't I talk to them? And it didn't make the slightest difference if you do.
Sure.
So there you are.
It sounds like you may have been better off doing the telepathic route.
Yes, well, I tried, but there was no response.
Interesting. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, if I don't do this, I'll get in trouble. This is by a member by the name of Mark Allen, who wants to know...
Gosh, a real name.
Yes. Do you own AboveTopSecret.com, the forum?
No, you see, this is why I've got a bone to pick with you guys. I have nothing to do with AboveTopSecret.com, but I've got a lot of people who do think that I'm involved with it.
Is that right?
And yes. And I promise you, I have nothing to do with it. You know that. You must know that. I would have thought most people know that. It's nothing to do with me at all.
Well, maybe we need to fan some shares of stocks your way or something.
Well, you know as well as I do that there's no copyright on titles. So.
That's right. That's right.
And I like it. I really don't object to it, you know, because it's what it's all about.
Very good. Hey, listen, what's currently on your watch list? Is there something that's on the horizon that you're kind of keeping your eye on that might be of a global significance?
Oh, my goodness.
or is that another show in itself?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably. I'm just interested in all this material being let out by governments. But, you know, already the press get it wrong. You know, in this country, Ministry of Defense to release top secret files. None of the files that they're going to be releasing in the next 3 years, which, and this is the you know, this is not the first time. I mean, every year they release files, for heaven's sakes, you know, because we've only had, we had a Freedom of Information Act. You had one since 1966.
Right.
We've only had a Freedom of Information Act since 2004. So the Ministry of Defense have been releasing a lot of material to preempt requests, because there's more interest on the MOD website in UFOs than on any other subject, including the Iraqi war, everything, the whole lot, on the Army Defense Ministry. So I'm quite interested in that, and I shall continue to file Freedom of Information requests about the more sort of interesting cases that they obviously don't plan to release too easily.
Do you personally have any new projects or books that you're working on that you can share with everyone to kind of whet their appetites with?
I wish. I just beg people to get hold of my book.
Okay.
I don't say this lightly. I'm very short of money.
Okay.
Often I admit to such a thing. And nobody would believe me anyway, because, you know, I'm a best-selling author, for heaven's sakes. But the fact is that I spent on that, I must have spent about $35,000, $40,000 investigating. Just Need to Know.
Sure.
And I spent $50,000 investigating the previous book. And people don't understand, you know, there are bestsellers and bestsellers. If you really want to become rich, millionaire, you need to have a bestseller for months and months and months or years on end. Then you become a millionaire.
Right.
But, you know, I've never had a book more than 12, 13 weeks in the bestseller list. And believe me, most authors do not make a lot of money from books. And I really hope that people will buy it in the States.
Well, please tell everybody where they could possibly pick up your books from.
Need to Know, UFOs, the Military and Intelligence, is available on Amazon, obviously cheaper than Borders. But what dismays me, in a sense, is that, you know, you'll often only find it in a sort of magic spells department in the New Age section, when it specifically says in the American edition, military. I don't know if you have one, Johnny. Do you have a copy of it?
I'm sorry, I do not.
Oh, my goodness. Did you not get the message I passed to your owners about contacting my publisher for a complimentary copy? Anyway, I'll make sure you get one.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
I'll send that. If you can just send me, you know, an email, your a mailing address, I'll send you a copy, Johnny.
Alrighty.
But on the back of that, it's categorized under military history, because I would like to take this subject out of the New Age section. Of course, there are New Age aspects to the subject. You can't get away from that. But increasingly, I'm finding that a lot of the people who are more into New Age stuff are less likely to touch UFO books. I don't know whether you have found the same thing in the States. You know,
yes, I have.
Mm-hmm. One reason I've got lots of photographs of aircraft involved in UFO incidents in Need to Know is because I've got hundreds of pilot cases, hundreds of documents, secret classified, top secret documents published for the first time. And I want to interest the aviation, you know, all the aviation buffs, the military buffs. There's a whole new readership out there. A lot of ufologists think that I just write books for ufologists. I do not. You know, we have to think of the wider public.
Sure.
And most people, I think you'll agree, are very, including journalists, are extremely ignorant about the subject.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, this is a sort of wake-up call, really. So please support all of us by getting hold of my book.
And we would also like to encourage our listeners and members alike to go to Timothy's website, which is located once again at www.timothygood.co.uk. That's TIMOTHYGOOD, all one word, timothygood.co.uk. Right. And I have to apologize to you, sir, one more time. My partner, Mr. Dave Rabbit, who was experiencing some technical problems, wanted to be with us very much, but our best to him, and we hope that he'll be able to get his problem taken care of. But on behalf of the staff and management here at AboveTopSecret.com, and on behalf of all our listeners and members, I can't tell you what a pleasure it has been, sir, to have you on board with us today. And we hope that you'll possibly come back again.
Well, I'd love to any time. It's been most enjoyable and provocative questions. If I can just say to
Please.
My American friends out there, I shall be appearing at the Aztec New Mexico UFO Symposium the weekend of 28th to 30th of March, and other speakers, including Stan Freeman and quite a number, will be there. It should be very interesting. I'll also be speaking at the Ozark UFO International UFO Conference in Eureka Springs from the 11th to the 13th of April, and there's quite a lineup of impressive speakers there, including Linda Howe and many others. Anyway, all these details will be on, you know, the www's will be on my website in the coming days.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. And we'll encourage everybody to go there to get more information and location and those dates once again. And so once again, Timothy, thank you so much for joining us on this special edition of the ATS Mix.
Thank you.
He's mad as hell, and here's why. Who's ready for a rant? ATS Mix presents the Rabbit's Rant. In other words, what the hell is ruffling Dave Rabbit's fur this time?
Relax and enjoy yourself.
This is the Rabbit's Rant.
And since we're at the close of this episode, that must mean that we're going to be knocking on the Rabbit's door right now to see what's got his fur all in a huffy. And so let's see what's happening there, Senior Rabbit. What's got you all riled up today?
Well, okay, today's rant basically is about something that happened just a couple of weeks ago to a beautiful...
Please don't tell me it was in Texas.
No.
Oh, thank God.
No, this is actually in Athens, Georgia.
All right.
A beautiful 22-year-old young lady by the name of Eve Carson, who was president of the... of her student council at the college there, or the senior class or whatever, was murdered by two men that were just recently released from prison for other crimes. And not only did they murder her, they shot her in the head multiple times. Then they stole her vehicle. And then, and this is what I love about criminals, John, everybody knows, unless you've just been sleeping under a log somewhere all your life, that the ATMs all around the world have these little cameras there because that's how they, you know, do security. Right. Every ATM has one. And why it is that stupid criminals constantly go to an ATM with a stolen card of someone they've murdered thinking, well, I guess it's going to be out of order when I decide to use it. It just drives me crazy. But the rant has to do with people getting out of prison and committing more crimes. This young lady, her whole life ahead of her, I mean, just had just an abundance of friends and family members and everything else. These two knuckleheads see her, think, okay, hey, we just got out of prison, so instead of doing the right thing, let's commit another crime. But because she's seen us, let's kill her. So that's what they do. They murder her in cold blood, multiple shots to the head, and then they steal her car, take her card, and then go to the ATM, and that's how one of them gets caught. The other one is still at large at this time. And my rant is letting people out of jail too early. And this is my personal opinion. I would rather spend an extra $10 or $20 a year, whatever the monumental thing would work out to, and build more prisons than to get ourselves in a situation because of prison overcrowding that we're letting people out early. Statistic after statistic proves, John, that people that get let out that have committed any kind of humanity crimes, you know, crimes against another person, 9 times out of 10 or 8 times out of 10, it's pretty high, I don't know the exact figure, they normally commit another crime that is a little bit more violent than what they went in for the first time. And I just don't understand the mentality of the world that we let people back on the street and just, you know, say, okay, well, you had 10 years to serve, but because of good behavior, we're going to let you out in 2. I think that is a just a malfeasance
of judicial propriety, and I just, it drives me absolutely crazy. What do you think?
Well, this is a very unfortunate thing that happened to this lady. It sounds like she was probably just randomly picked.
Yep.
I understand where you're coming from with it. There is something wrong with the system and the releasing of these people, these convicts, early for good behavior, and then they turn right around, and you say the statistics lead one to believe that the first thing they're going to do when they're released is probably go out and commit another crime. Is that not what you were saying?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, because they've got that. Let me preface by saying they have that label that now they're an ex-con, right?
Right.
So they can't go out and get a normal job. And I understand all that. Trust me, I understand all that. But, you know, I just have real problems with people being released early, John.
What's the solution then? What's the alternative? What would be the rabbit's consideration for an alternative?
More prisons. I mean, you know, if the reasoning is that they're letting them out because of prison overcrowding, then you build more prisons.
Whether they're released early or not, if they serve their full term, when they get out, a convict's mentality, from what I've read and researched, is basically still a convict. So they're probably still going to go out there and commit those crimes. I think the problem would still exist, whether they were released early or not.
Well, I grant you that you have a valid point there, John, but in this particular case, this 22-year-old beautiful young lady that had her life in front of her would not be dead today, okay? That's my point. Now, if these guys served another 8 years and killed somebody, okay, you know, here again, like you say, it's one dead person versus another dead person. But this young lady that we're talking about today would not be dead because these two guys would still be serving their sentences that they were sentenced by their peers for.
Okay, yes. So she's alive. This did not happen. They did not get released early, but eventually they do serve their term and they get released. The odds are, from the research I've done, is that they're still going to commit a crime, and odds are it would be somebody else that is random. So the problem still persists. Having more prisons, I don't think, is going to solve the problem, and I don't know that for a fact, but what I'm saying is the mentality when one is released, whether they're released early or whether they've served their full term, is that they are still in convict mode, and they are still going to commit those crimes.
Well, I think probably the simplest answer is the old Dave Ravitch adage, and that is to get a 2x4, beat the living crap out of them, and if they die, then they were wrong, and if they live, then they're not wrong.
Well, all right. I understand that mentality since I've been your partner for such a long time. I know there's been plenty of times you'd like to have hit me over the head with a 2x4. But let me, addressing this problem with the release, there has been a concept, and I don't know if it has ever reached Congress or not, but right. Let me just publicly state this little scenario. There has been an idea that when prisoners get released, they should be placed in a community, so to speak, where for a while they get acclimated to being out of prison. They are in an environment that would be similar to a real community, and they get reacclimated to society. Because, see, for all these numerous years, all they've known is the prison mentality, which is a completely different world. If nobody has ever been in prison, the whole world is a completely different world. It's a yin and yang situation. They have their own set of rules. It is completely distant from what we would ever think of out in the real world. When they get released, we can't assume that these folks to then reacclimate, boom, right overnight into the real world again, because they've been in this alternate world for such a long time. I kind of think that the idea, although novel, sounds very interesting. And that's it.
Well, no, I don't necessarily think that it's not a bad idea. And listen, for all our members here at AboveTopSecret.com, if you have an opinion about this particular rant about felons and prisons and whether they should be this or be that, please come in and post it on this show. And we'd love to, you know, see some of your comments about it, because everybody has an opinion. It's just like I've always said, everyone has a butt.
Easy
I
here.
Butt box. Hole. And anyway. So anyway. I guess
and they're willing to share it with everybody.
And they're willing to share
it. Whether you want it to or not.
And some more than others.
That's right.
So I guess we buried this. Not to
let's remind everybody also to please participate in the damn sound offs, will you please?
Yeah, hey, what's the deal with this? You know, I mean, you know, Johnny and I, you know,
even your heavy breather, Dave, hasn't called back.
And I love Sarah, whatever her name was. You know, I think it actually was Honda, but I can't be sure.
Oh, careful.
Oops, sorry. Anyway, so please be sure and put your comments on your post here on this particular thread of this particular show. So until next week, we will see you, and I would be, till then, Dave Rabbit.
And I would, of course, still be Johnny Anonymous. We'll catch you next time on the ATS Mix.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.AboveTopSecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll